So I think that most of the folks have been at a couple on the jury. I've been coming here on and off for quite a while, and I haven't been here on a Saturday morning because I usually get up this early or get out of the house this early. But it's okay. So I'm really not sure how this goes or how much time, so I'll just keep going until something yells to stop. And what I'd like to do is maybe share a couple of stories and talk a little bit about what's going on with me and how it's kind of related to our practice, and say a couple of poems that I thought were nice. So, this is a Zen story that I stumbled across yesterday when I was looking around to figure out what to talk about. And I don't know if it counts as a koan, but probably some of you have heard it, probably, sir. It's called The Abbot's Gift. A Zen monk early in his training is preparing to leave the monastery and switch locations, for that is common in the Zen practice. Before he leaves, he goes to the abbot of the monastery to say goodbye. He does so, but the abbot says he has a gift for him. Now, it is part of the Japanese way to accept gifts and be appreciative. To do otherwise is rude and therefore wrong. The abbot takes a pair of tongs and picks up a red hot coal from the adjacent fire pit on which he has a tea kettle. The young monk starts to contemplate what he should do, and after a few moments runs out of the hall distressed, for he cannot figure out what he's supposed to do. He can take the coal and be burned, or he can refuse the gift of the abbot. Both in his mind are things he cannot do. He meditates on the problem for the next week and comes back to say goodbye. However, the same scene is played again, and the same frustration is found when he tries to figure out what the abbot wants him to do. He meditates further on the subject and feels he has discovered how to respond to the abbot's gift. He returns for the third time, it's always the third time, to say goodbye to the abbot, and as before, the abbot picks up a red hot coal and presents it as a gift to the young monk. The young monk simply replies, "Thank you." The abbot breaks a grin, nods his head, and returns the coal to the fire pit. "You may go now," he says. So it doesn't take a red hot coal, but I really do want to say thank you. I'm very grateful to Sarah and Andrew and the community here, and everybody that has been supportive of my practice. It's really not a lot, and I think, as many of you know, I'm also involved with another Buddhist group, Rocky Mountain Insight, and these groups have just so much in common, and they provide a base for practice for life. So I wanted to say a few words about Sangha. We take the three refuges we do in all the Buddhist groups that I've ever been to. The Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, the awakening of the way, and companions, right? And so Sangha, a community, was established by the Buddha, traditionally for the monks and nuns, but later on became to refer to anybody who was a stream enterer, somebody who was on the path to awakening. Sangha, the community, I do have a version of the refuges from Thich Nhat Hanh, the kind of one. I take refuge in the Buddha, the one who shows me the way in this life. I take refuge in the Dharma, the way of understanding and of love. I take refuge in the Sangha, the community that lives in harmony and awareness. There is a story about Ananda, one of the Buddha's chief disciples, who who asks the Buddha, says, I think the spiritual friendship is half of the practice. And the Buddha says, no, Ananda, it's all of the practice. And so it has been, I think I relate to that, it is an important part of community. And, when I've traveled and visited other sanghas, I've always felt welcomed and comfortable and very compatible. I mean, I haven't been to any of the, many of the Asian ethnic communities, but that's certainly been my experience. And so I wanted to mention that because, as you probably know, I'm heading out to Albuquerque, where I've only been a few times as visits. But I have total confidence in being welcomed and being able to share in the communities there. And I did find, well, probably many of you know, the Upaya Zen Center in Santa Fe, which is such a wonderful resource for Buddhist teaching. And their Reishi John Halifax is a world-famous Buddhist and teacher. So Sangha, this part of the practice, I think, makes me feel confident that even though I barely know one person there, that I can find a community of people that will be compatible, that will be supportive, and will be a good thing for me. So I have one other story. I think I forgot to print it out, but it's short. It's the parable of the 84th problem, which, as far as I know, doesn't occur in any of the suttas or sutras, but is attributed to Buddha. It's about a man who goes to the Buddha and asks if he can help him. And he starts to recite a list of problems in his life. His children are disrespectful. His wife doesn't always appreciate him. His job is hard, and so on and so on. And the Buddha stops him and says, I can't help you with any of those problems. But I can help you with the 84th problem, and that is that you don't want to have any problems. And so that's the clarity that comes that we're always going to be dealing with dukkha, with suffering, with disease, with discomfort. And you may fix one thing, but something else will pop up. So here I am heading off, partly in response to the problems I've had here. I've lived in Colorado almost 30 years, and I love it here. But the winters are starting to get to me, and my house is too big, and I need to downsize. I have problems with the driveway, and so on and so on. And so, trading those problems for some unknown, it's kind of futile in the sense that you're going to solve all your problems. But the reality is that there are things that you can do, so it doesn't mean that you're paralyzed and you may as well just sit and stew. And I've been in a rut for such a long time that I really did want to kind of break out and try something different. So I feel energized about this. I'm excited to find new things. It kind of reminds me of the time when I moved here from Washington, D.C. so long ago, spent every weekend exploring the Southwest, and it was a wonderful thing. So I'm getting older. I know the rest of you aren't, but I am. I'm kind of thinking, I don't know how many years, we never know how many years we have left, but I'm pretty sure it'll be a lot more difficult to try to make a big change later on. So I think this, for me, makes sense. And leaving Colorado, leaving our wonderful community here, leaving Sarah and our good Steve and Clay and John, everybody, you folks have been such a great treasure for me, and I appreciate it. It's still the right time for me to make a change in my life. So. So this is short. I wanted to just share a couple of poems. So this first one is from Antonio Machado. I think it's fairly well known. Caminante no hay camino. See?
Close enough.
So traveler, there is no road. And the translation is, traveler, your footprints are the only road, nothing else. Traveler, there is no road. You make your own path as you walk. As you walk, you make your own road. And when you look back, you see the path you will never travel again. Traveler, there is no road, only a ship's wake on the sea. And the other one I wanted to read is from David White called The Journey. And he actually was inspired by a poem of the same name from Mary Oliver, The Journey. And so I just want to read a few lines from the Mary Oliver poem. The stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life that you could save. And a corresponding David White poem. Above the mountains, the geese turn into the light again, painting their black silhouettes on an open sky. Sometimes everything has to be inscribed across the heavens so you can find the one line already written inside you. Sometimes it takes a great sky to find that first bright and indescribable wedge of freedom in your own heart. Sometimes, with the bones of the black sticks left when the fire has gone out, someone has written something new in the ashes of your life. You are not leaving, even as the light fades quickly now. You are arriving.